getting something, getting somewhere. Okay, so they're interested in money. Okay, verse 2, covetous. Next one, boasters. Boasters. Okay, and just listen to people talk. Okay, and you hear, is this thing messing up? Should I get rid of this? Okay, got it figured out or working on it. Okay, boasters, they just brag about themselves and everything. And they may not be real boisterous about that, but listen to people talk, and you will see that they talk about themselves quite regularly. Young people are affected by peer pressure, okay, terribly. When they walk in a room, they think, oh, what are they doing? They're looking at me. They realize they're not looking at you. What is everybody thinking about? They're thinking about themselves. So why should there be peer pressure? Okay? Everybody is focused on themselves. Okay, so boasters, next one, proud. Proud. Okay, that seems to be an acceptable sin. But that one is so bad with God that in Proverbs 6, verse 16, he says, these six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are abomination to him. And the first one is a proud look. God hates the look of pride, let alone pride itself. The look of pride. Okay, now what, you know, probably the good examples of the look of pride, whenever you get a newspaper and you see the star athletes, you know, they have a you know, tough look. That's a look of pride. Okay. Whenever you are pulling out of a parking lot and somebody maybe walks in front of you and they just kind of look like this, like dare you to run over them. You know, when that look comes, I do want to run over them. Okay. But, okay, that's a look of pride. Okay, next one's blasphemers. Self-explanatory, people cuss God all the time. Interesting, the next one, disobedient to parents, is in this list. Okay, remember under the Old Testament covenant, if a child smacked his mother, that was a warrant for the death sentence. If a kid cussed out his parents, that was a warrant for the death sentence. Okay, so here you have disobedient to parents. The next one, unthankful, is most likely, you know, the motive or the underlying thing of why children are disobedient to their parents. No gratitude. Unthankful. Bob Jones Sr. used to say that when a man has lost his gratitude, he is well nigh hopeless. And that's true. It's too bad that Thanksgiving is only one holiday out of the year. One of the few good ones. Okay, but gratitude. Americans seldom say thank you. They seldom express their gratitude. And gratitude should be as regular as heartbeat. If people tend to think that the world revolves around them, and they tend to expect things. You know, even they call government subsidies now entitlements, like they're entitled to it. Okay, and this is a generation that is a spoiled generation raised up on Dr. Spock's mentality, and the children seldom express gratitude. Okay, and gratitude should be something that is not really only taught, but that is something that is caught by example. Okay, husband expressing his gratitude to his wife. You know, after a meal, that was the best can that you've ever opened lately. You know, something like that. Okay. But it is an expression, you know, of gratitude. Okay, and the thing is whenever we ask somebody to do something, realizing it's taking their most precious commodity, and that's their time. I'm probably overboard on this. You know, as far as our services, usually, you know, I usually keep them at an hour. And I feel that if a guy can't get what he's got to say in 35 to 45 minutes, he might as well just sit down and shut up. And a lot of guys can talk for an hour without saying anything. And, you know, I'm very cautious about people's time. You know, there's a fine line when folks who drive for great distances, they want to hear something. They want some time. They don't want a 10-minute deal. But yet, I want to make sure that people feel like it was worthy of their time. And so there's a fine line in there. There's a balance in there. And I know I'm probably, I'd rather be on the side where people leave and say, boy, that went too fast, than saying, man, that drug on forever. Okay, and because we got padded pews, I guess this rule doesn't take an effect anymore, but it used, if you have wood pews, the mind can only retain what the bottom can sustain. Okay, and I'm thinking, you know, why do these guys just drag these things on? I mean, they've got, you know, time after time to deal with people. Granted, there are times where, you know, a message may need to be 60 minutes. There may be a time it may need to be 30 minutes. Okay, but the idea is being considerate of other people's time. Okay, unthankful. Next one's unholy. That's self-explanatory. Without natural affection. That's a strange thing, but we're seeing more and more of that these days. Like a girl going to the prom, giving birth in a bathroom, dumping her child down a garbage can. That is not natural. Okay? Unnatural affection. Affection that's against nature. Okay? Now, granted, there are some animals that if they are so out of whack chemically and as far as their health, yeah, they'll turn around and eat their young. But there's a reason for that often. Okay? But yet when people, when a mother can just leave her child, that is not natural. Okay? And there's other things involved with this. Truce breakers is the next one. Truce breakers. Of course, we know that the Muslims are taught in the Quran that they can make an agreement, a ceasefire, for the maximum of 10 years. Okay, and even if they could cut it short in 10 years, to them, a ceasefire is nothing but a time to regain forces. That's what the Quran teaches them. So what does a peace talk do? What does it mean? It's got no meaning to it at all. Okay, and so truce breakers, of course, for years and years, you know, America would sign these truces or peace treaties with the Soviet Union. You know they didn't going to keep them. I don't know if some of you remember. I can remember as a kid, we'd be watching the Olympics, and when it got to some of the Olympics where it was based on a judge's opinion, whenever you knew there were three judges and two were Soviets and one was U.S., the U.S. was always getting shafted. Always. I mean, that was so obvious. Okay? And that's because of what they've been taught. Okay? Truce breakers, false accusers. False accusers, this is one that goes with, there are two sins that are listed in that list of seven in Proverbs 6. These six things that the Lord hate, yea, seven are abomination unto him. One of them is a lying tongue. Okay? That's the sin, not the sinner. And then I think it's either the sixth or seventh one. I think it's the sixth one. It says a false witness. Now, some of the biggest false witnesses or liars or false accusers are often officers of the government. What was one thing that John the Baptist said to the law enforcement people when they came to him in Luke 3. Luke chapter 3, verse 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, I find these things rather interesting. There are three groups of people that came to John the Baptist and all had similar questions. What shall we do? Very similar to the question Acts 2:38. 2:37. Okay, and the people, when the people asked him that question, what shall we do then? He answered, he that hath two coats, let him impart to him that hath none, and he that hath meat, let him do likewise. Okay, then the publicans asked him, okay, the publicans, that you put R-E in front of publicans, you have republicans. So this is the bureaucrats. This would be the Roman agents of the Roman government. Okay, the publicans came to him, and they said, what shall we do? And he said, exact no more than that which is appointed to you. What's an exaction? Okay, an exaction I have defined in the footnote of Ezekiel 45, verse 9. Exaction is a bill or a charge to someone who actually doesn't owe the charge, but they charge it to him. What it's like, it's somebody being fined for something that they are not justifiable in the fine. Example, if a police officer stops you and gives you a ticket for a driving offense, when you're not driving, you're traveling, that would be an exaction. Okay, remember the difference between driving and traveling. Driving is operating a motor vehicle on the highways for hire, a truck driver, a bus driver, a taxi. If somebody pays you from taking you from point A to B, you become a driver. A traveler is somebody who's in your car. Everybody here tonight traveled here. Okay, and the Title IX in Indiana is the driving or highway regulations, and if you look in there, those apply to, first off, drivers, secondly, to state employees. It says it in there. Okay? And so when they charge you something for this, if you don't want to go, if you want to fight it, you have to go to court and fight it and fight it and fight it and fight it. That's an exaction. Okay, an exaction is what banks do. You go into the Mr. Banker, you sign a promissory note, you have created money out of thin air, you give that to him as a gift, he takes it and sells it, gets currency for that amount, or at least numbers, takes it and puts that in your bank account, and then you've given him something, and he's given you something, and he expects you to pay back what he gave you, but he don't have to pay back what you gave him. That's an exaction. If you look in your mortgage agreement, it will make in there, it will have statements in there, waiver clauses, a waiver clause of demand to pay, make payment. It says it right in the contract. It says in the contract that they cannot demand you to make payment. But they will take you to the bank or to the court if you don't make the payment. That's an exaction. Does it? Yeah. Okay. That's interesting, because they're getting fought in court, that's why. They don't want it in front of a jury. They want it in front of a judge who they can pay off. Okay, that's exaction. Okay, now the other one, here's the law enforcement of the publicans, verse 14. The soldiers likewise demanded of him, saying, and what shall we do? And he said unto them, do violence to no man, neither accuse any falsely, and be content with your wages. So they have a problem with accusing people falsely. So, and in fact, the Supreme Court has said in Briscoe versus LeHue, that an officer, a police officer, can lie on the witness stand with immunity. That makes him an not an invalid witness, but an untrustworthy witness. I forget what. Not incompetent. What's the word we want? I can't recall what we want on that one. Okay, so that's a tendency. Okay, the next one is incontinent. Battery's probably going bad. Okay, incontinent is no restraint on passions or appetites, generally often sexual passions. Ain't that this generation? You teach them they came from an animal, they're going to act like it. Fierce, strangely enough, when you put fierce with incontinent, that's called sadism or masochism, and that's getting quite prevalent. Quite prevalent in the U.S. Masochism. I think battery's getting shot. Okay, let's see. The next one, despisers of those that are good. Okay, 2 Timothy 3, verse 2, 3, 4, 5, all one sentence, verse 5. Now, verse 2, 3, 4, a person could focus that on the world system, on unsaved people, even though you find this in the church also. Verse 5 is definitely focused at the church structure. Having a form of godliness but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. Having a form of godliness, okay? Anybody that's poured concrete knows what a concrete form is. Okay, it's the concrete form, you put that up, hollow on the inside, have some rebar in there. And you're going to put the concrete inside, but the form itself is hollow. So these people have on the outside something that appears as a wall or something that appears to be godly, but when you get on the inside, you will find that these people are hollow. There ain't nothing to them. Okay, you'll find a lot of times when you see a big name preacher, okay, and he may have a church of 1,000, but yet if you pull him aside and get asking him Bible questions and try to talk to him just like an individual one-on-one, you're going to find that most of them are just as shallow as a chocolate Easter bunny. Ain't nothing inside. I mean, they know the standard, you know, how to play the politics, how to entertain, how to keep the crowd going. But when you get talked to them one-on-one, it is a form of godliness, but they deny the power thereof. Now, the power specifically there, you could say, is the Word of God. The Word of God is quick and powerful. These men, many of them, use a book that they don't believe. Okay, every individual that was involved with the New King James, every man that was a part of that translation, admitted in their initial advertisement campaign that they don't believe that God has preserved His Word perfectly today. Now, of course, they didn't say it that way. But they all had to sign a statement that they believed that God inspired the original autographs. Well, how do they know that? They don't know that, except for reading a copy of that, but yet they don't believe the copy is perfect. Everyone in the New King James, and even the New King James, if you look on the title page, it's got, you know, 666 stamped in that little enigma in front. Okay, and now these people will quickly jump back and say, well, many of the King James translators, they didn't think they were good at translating, you know, and they didn't think that God inspired a translation. But they believed God preserved His Word perfectly. Okay, and their level of scholarship, much higher than what we got today. And honesty was much higher than what we have today. Okay, having a form of godliness but denying the power thereof, notice the last statement, from such turn away. Now that's hard to do when you were raised in that stuff. How do you turn away from that? Okay, I have a cross-reference to 1 Timothy 6, verse 5. It's difficult to walk away from a church that your family grew up in. That's difficult. It's difficult in the Catholic faith. It's difficult in the Dutchy faith. As a kid, when we pulled out of the Dutch Corner Church, I, as a kid, didn't know the pressure my parents went through. But it's very similar pressure, you see. And the thing is, they think, you mean what we got ain't good enough for you? It's not that at all. There are a lot of good things. It's just that the Lord is leading us elsewhere. People have a hard time accepting that. 1 Timothy 6, verse 5, it says, perverse disputings of men, of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, supposing that gain is godliness, from such withdraw thyself. Okay, and so the thing to do is that you realize it's going to take time. There's a time to turn away. There's a time to try to stay and help, but there's a time to walk away from something. If the ship is half filled with water and you don't got time to bail, it's time to get out. And there's times you just got to let things go. Funny, I was in Morocco several years ago, knocking on some doors in Morocco, the big metropolis, Morocco. I think we can cover the whole town in about four weeks. And there's a Methodist church that had a little thing on their marquee, and it says, if the horse is dead, dismount. And I thought that was pretty good, especially for that church, because most likely that church was dead. But they wouldn't have recognized it. Okay, and so there's times to pull away. And it's most likely to be a very slow process. And that's fine. Let the Lord lead. Make sure it's of the Lord. Verse 6, he says, for of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with diverse lust. Okay, creeping in houses. I suppose you could look at the Mormon elders and think about them, or Jehovah's Witnesses and think about them. Okay, but this looks like in this passage, they're leading women into this religious system. And of course, the general movement in America that is more effeminate origin or oriented is charismatics. Okay, the charismatic movement is, and the New Bible is an effeminate movement in itself. They try to feminize God, even to the point where the NIV itself, the publishers of the NIV, about 6 or 7 years ago, came out with, they hinted that they were coming out with a non-gender Bible. Okay, and so they didn't want God to be a male. They didn't want Jesus to be male. They didn't want him to refer to his father. Okay, and so they hinted at that. And even the NIV people were alarmed about that. They even, threw their disgust in it. So the American Bible Society came out and said, okay, we've stopped that translation. We're not going to do it. But then a few years later, they come out with the Bible, non-gender. So they lied. But of course, it's not going to go anywhere. It's just going to bankrupt them. Okay, but as far as silly women laden with sins, a lot of times if you go to Pentecostal churches, if you go to Pentecostal church, even for the entertainment, you'll see that the women will be speaking in tongues, forbidden in 1 Corinthians 14. And you will notice that they will basically be running the program. And the men, many of the men that are real honest-to-goodness men will just be sitting there. A few years ago, remember the Promise Keepers? Had a lady talk to me about the Promise Keepers one time, and she was disgusted because her husband went one time and wouldn't go back. I laughed, and I said, he's probably a man. Okay, because the Promise Keepers, generally speaking, was a charismatic push. Okay, I'm not saying they're all bad. I'm just saying generally that was the push of it. Okay, verse 7. This verse, I think, would be a great billboard neon lights in front of every state institution in Indiana and America, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. I think that'd be super. Right in front of Purdue, you know, IU, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of truth. I'm trying to develop a nice a big sign for us for the college campuses with that as the headline. And then, I think I got it figured out. I have a fellow that will paint it for me, but I just got to get the thing going. I think if I had it in three divisions on the sign, you want to have it big enough so that it gets their attention, but yet you want to have enough in the picture so they can stand there and look at it. Ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of truth. You don't know where you came from, so you have a professor with a human head and a monkey's head going back and forth like this. Don't know where they came from. And then in the middle, you can have somebody in a couch talking to a psychiatrist. I don't know who I am. You know. And then the third one, I haven't quite figured that one out. You know, where are they going to go, heaven or hell? They don't know, heaven, hell, or the pet cemetery. They have not a clue. Ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of truth. They just don't know. And, of course, they boast about it. They say, we have come to learn that you can know nothing for certain in life. And it costs them thousands of dollars to come up with that conclusion. I would have saved them all the money. Only charged them $5,000 for teaching them that. Okay, but the sad fact is that this is also now in the Christian schools. Ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of truth, they don't know if God has preserved His Word, and they don't know where it is. They have not a clue of where it is. And a very sad thing. Okay, next verse. Now, as Jannes and Jambres withstood Moses. Now, these two fellows are not named anywhere in the Old Testament. So this is some additional light that we're not going to find in the Old Testament. As Jannes and Jambres withstood Moses, so do these also resist the truth. Men of corrupt minds, reprobate concerning the faith. Now, often, when you find a man that God uses, there's somebody else that's going to have, they think it's their ministry to point out all the blind spots of this man and try to straighten him out. Jannes and Jambres with those two fellows. Of course, Moses also had, Korah, Biram, Dothan, those guys caused him headaches. Okay, and the general rule of thumb is that good men, men with drive, men who are conservative are the ones who create things. Okay, Moody Bible Institute began by a man who was a soul winner, who believed God, believed the Word, D.L. Moody. It originally was called Chicago Bible Institute. After D.L. Moody passed away, they changed it to Moody Bible Institute because they thought they could attract more students because of D.L. Moody. Now, if you go to the Moody Bible Institute today, and if D.L. Moody came back today and went to Moody Bible Institute, he would run out 99% of them because it's part of the dying process. Good men start things, liberals come and take it over, and then it's the dying process. This is why, for example, in talk radio, you don't find a liberal-thinking individual having a long-standing talk radio program. Why? They don't have original thoughts. I remember years ago, there was a guy that, when I first started listening to Rush Limbaugh, it was the third year when he came in. He was good back then. I mean, he'd have Mike Tyson impersonators. He would play caller abortion. If you've never heard him do the caller abortion, that is a classic. But he don't do that anymore. There was a guy that followed him called Bob Lassiter. Remember him? Oh, that guy was a liberal. I'd listen to him just to get mad. Because he was a liberal as all get out, but he didn't last long. With him on there? Okay. But you see, liberals, they cannot have a long-standing program. It's conservatives that do these things. Why? Because they have some, maybe not original thought, but they do think for themselves. Okay, and the same goes as far as church, as far as Bible, I mean as far as colleges. A good man is one who will start churches. Okay, and you know, I just got an email this past week. There's a group of families in Virginia. They said they're tired of sitting in the pews, listening to a man who carries a Bible and don't believe it. So they're looking for a pastor to help them get something going. And then they had their statement of faith on the internet. And I looked it over and I thought, man, that was a pretty good statement of faith. So I wrote them a letter and I said, boy, you did a fantastic job in your statement of faith. You know, I'll pray for you. You can find the right man for you. And the guy wrote back, and you know, I, of course, put my name at the bottom, Hoffman, and they wrote back and said, oh, we got your reference Bible. It's our favorite one, and blah, 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 and he went on about that. He said he stuck it on top of his car and drove off, and he lost it, and he looked for an hour or two and found it, and he said he was back in the church one day. He said, isn't it great? God's word will not return void. And so they're looking for a preacher, and so I told Brother Glenn down there in Florida if he knew anybody, asked if he knew anybody, and so we know somebody in Utah wants to get out of Mormon country, so we might try to put them together. But you see, it's a good man that's going to start that. Liberals ain't going to start it. Now, if a good man starts that thing and the thing gets going, and if he leaves, if they don't get another good man in, that thing's going to die. You see, that's the dying process. The English language is dying. You know, you just go on the street and listen to people, you know, pretend to talk English. What's going to keep it pure is this book. But what are the churches doing? They're attacking this book and trying to pull this out and put in this newfangled stuff, and it's part of the dying process. America's dying. If our founding fathers showed up today, they would have probably said it wasn't worth it, the sacrifice they paid. The country's dying. You see? And so this is the process. Okay? And so these two fellows, Jannes and Jambres, were guys who withstood Moses. Just give them a headache. They just felt it was part of their ministry. And they resist the truth. These men, Jannes and Jambres, will not be given credit for any constructive act in their life. Always want to tear down, tear down, tear down. Moses was a man that God used to construct things. This generation today, they think it's funny if they throw a rock in a window. Put, you know, key a car. You know, bust up a building, burn down a building. Oh, that's so funny. You know, any idiot can do that. One sinner destroyeth much good. It takes a brain to build it. You see? But that's this generation. It's a destructive generation. I think it's funny. Several years ago, when we worked with the teenagers up in Chicago, this is where I met Brother Garcia. Seventh grade. Boy, I'm dating myself. I remember him in seventh grade. And so we would take some of the teenagers to a park in the area. And one time when we got there, there were two kids that were throwing rocks in these windows in this school. So we nabbed them and, you know, started lecturing them, calling the cops on the kids. And in our lecturing process, one of the kids was a Hammond Baptist kid. And I looked at the kid, I said, this kid's lost, you're saved. I said, what are you throwing a rock in a window for? Well, I couldn't say no. I said, what? If he said, would you drink a beer with me, what would you say? Well, I'd say no. You know, and this kid said, well, I'd say yes. And I said, what's so hard about saying no? Can you say no? You know, the kid just couldn't say no to somebody. And he got in trouble. You see, but they thought it was funny throwing a rock in a window. You know, that's his generation. Okay, that's Jannes and Jambres. 8, let's see, verse 9. But they shall proceed no further, for their folly shall be manifest unto all men as theirs also. Now, the ultimate of this manifestation of their folly would be the white throne judgment. And boy, that is going to be an interesting time. You'll see the mafia cut up Jimmy Hoffa's body as they put it in the Meadowlands concrete. You know, the white throne judgment's going to be rather interesting. Okay, that's verse 9. We'll stop there because 10 gets into Paul's testimony. Okay, any questions or comments that we covered with all those distractions tonight?